This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Today, we are pleased to welcome some very awesome guests regarding a company that is helping to innovate the workflows around alternative investments for those people that have invested in limited partnerships or any other types of alternative security. Non-public securities can understand just how difficult it can be to track everything from capital calls to your performance, valuations, and the like. So we're very happy to have Alt Exchange on, so stick around for that. Today on the download, it is kind of a mixed bag on the markets. One prevailing sentiment is that money is going to be much harder to come by as Wall Street prepares to restructure almost $40 billion of corporate-hung debt. Essentially what this is Wall Street banks such as Bank of America, Citigroup have traditionally been the ones that underwrite large mergers and acquisitions or funding shortfalls, things like that. And we've seen a lot of different either corporate buyouts or restructurings that have been financed by Wall Street. Now, traditionally, this debt is not something that likes to be held on to long term, but with prevailing investor sentiment starting to cool on everything from stocks to bonds, mutual funds, this debt is going to be something that they are trying to offload quickly and essentially will more or less prevent any new type of mergers and acquisitions from moving forward. So for those people that are interested in acquiring stocks that have a potential for buyout or just the general markets of mergers and acquisitions are looking pretty bleak for the foreseeable future. Right now, the biggest culprits with the corporate hung debt are Twitter, Citrix, and Nielsen. Twitter having a large, almost $12 billion chunk of the corporate debt that is being held by Wall Street right now, which was, of course, the corporate takeover funded by Elon Musk. But essentially, the way that worked is that Elon Musk did not just write a check out of his bank account for the entire purchase of Twitter, which was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $49 billion. It was done with loans secured by his Tesla stock, and the financing for those loans came from Wall Street banks. So again, a little bit more of a complex issue, but it is going to further exacerbate the issues of the velocity of money, which is essentially is what needed in order to keep markets flowing. So that will definitely cause at least a short-term slowdown, if not maybe a longer-term one as well. The S&P 500 opened strong today, Tuesday, November 15th, on the updated CPI and producer price index numbers, meaning that demand for goods is increasing and prices are starting to stabilize a little bit, which is fantastic news. Granted, the cost of money, so people needing to borrow money for things like homes and credit cards, everything like that, is still very high, with a 30-year fixed rate mortgage right now covering close to 7%, which is just astounding. And we are seeing indications from the Fed that there might be another rate increase coming in the coming months. So certainly something to look out for as well. But this is the first time that the service prices have fallen since the beginning of 2022. So great things to look at. It's very awesome to see that some prices are starting to come down and service prices are starting to come down as well. Now, something that is very much doom and gloom is the nature of the crypto markets currently. We'll get into a little bit of what has occurred in the past week, which is mind-boggling to say the least, with FTX. But the larger coins such as Ethereum and Bitcoin have price stabilized a good amount. Bitcoin, after crashing into the low $16,000 mark, bounced back 4.4% today, rising over $17,000 a coin, which is good news for anyone invested in cryptocurrency. Now, a little bit about FTX. This one of the world's largest cryptocurrency exchanges has essentially vanished within the past few days. The former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, seeing a $19 billion valued wealth completely disappear. Essentially, he is bankrupt within about 3 days of last week, Sunday, Monday into Tuesday, when he eventually was ousted as CEO of the company. Now, there's a lot of different issues that happen with this, but it's most parallel to kind of a bank run where people were seeing cracks in the armor with different things that were happening with the company, and a lot of people started to try to get their debt, try to get their assets, their cryptocurrency, and their cash out of FTX, and they could not meet their obligations, so they froze withdrawals and transfers of all digital assets. What is even more concerning is that there are reports now that over $100 million of cash and assets was illegally accessed and transferred out of the company. So a lot of really crazy things are going on with this, and it'll certainly be something to continue to follow very closely as the days and weeks wind on with this. It's kind of anyone's guess as to what exactly is going to happen with it, but I have a strong belief that there will be much more to come with regard to criminality and malfeasance and all sorts of things coming out of the situation with FTX. This has been The Download. Today on the What Is Machine Learning? We talk about this quite a bit in my interview with AltExchange, so I figured it would be probably pretty good for me to define it on the front end. Machine learning is a field of inquiry devoted to understanding and building methods that learn, that is, methods that leverage the data to improve performance of some sets of tasks. It is seen as an integral part of artificial intelligence. Machine learning algorithms build a model based on simple data, known as training data, in order to make predictions or decisions without being explicitly programmed to do so. Machine learning algorithms are used in a wide variety of applications, such as medicine, email filtering, speech recognition, agriculture, and computer vision, where it's difficult or unfeasible to develop conventional algorithms to perform the needed tasks. This is machine learning, and this has been The What Is. Alex Pernius. Today we have Zach Boca with AltExchange. We're going to be digging into some really interesting stuff on the side of people that are invested in alternatives, people that maybe are becoming limited partners into multiple deals, and some of the issues that you might run into, because it's all well and good to say, hey, you know, I've identified and done my due diligence and I'm investing in this capacity. But, you know, unlike with your traditional wirehouses, where it's kind of easy to, you know, see everything on one spreadsheet, everything exports really nicely into P&L statements, and you can really track everything pretty nicely, the disjointed nature of investing into private investments can cause its own set of issues. And this is what Zach's company has kind of aimed to alleviate for investors. So I think it's a really interesting topic and you get some great benefit out of it. So again, Zach, thanks for being with us today. So maybe give us a little bit of background on, you know, where you came from in your professional life and what kind of led you into the path of doing what you do now with AltExchange.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Alex. So I've been a serial entrepreneur really since I was, I think, 12 years old, my first business. And along, you know, everything that I've focused on, I've exited out of four companies. Everything I've focused on has been digitizing a certain space. And predominantly it's been around the infrastructure space, really providing this digital experience, automating infrastructure and data centers. I made my first alt investment in 2008. It was an interesting time to come into some cash. I had sold a business and was really looking at how I deploy it. And I got really interested in alts. I think as an operator, they just kind of excited me, the deal, the management team, the strategy. And so I began investing in alts, continued that. And it was around 2019, I had built up a pretty large portfolio of alts, about 40 different funds. And I got a call one evening. It was a Friday night. I got a call from a manager that I had already invested in. And they said, do you want to invest in this next deal? And I hung up the phone. And I said, well, I don't even know how the first deal did. I'm in it, but I've lost track of my spreadsheet. I can't keep up. I don't know how this thing's going. And so really that led me to really AltExchange and figuring out a far better way to keep track of not only performance, but also, frankly, what you owe, where these deals are, where they live, and avoid logging into just all of the hurdles that you have as you build a more complex portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we were talking about before we started recording this and dealing with that large profit sharing that's winding down. I mean, I have well over, 100 different individual holdings to input for different clients coming out of this one block, it's all spreadsheets. It's been one of those things where I'm kind of, sifting through and, putting on my accounting hat of saying, okay, like forensically, like, what do we have here? What's this one? How many shares? What class? Is there capital calls? Is this fully funded? Doing stuff in this space, while it can be very lucrative and very attractive for a lot of people, there's a lot of stuff that just is not as automated as we'd like. You know, we live in a society of, okay, great, I log onto my computer and there it is. So, from that perspective, what were some of the kind of the first, like you said, you had, about 40 in your portfolio, you got a call from someone saying, hey, do you want to invest in the first round? Well, hey, how did the first one do? Obviously I don't want to invest in someone that's just trying to, keep themselves afloat with an additional round. So, that kind of being the catalyst for, what started you on this path, what were some of the first things that you decided, okay, here are the kind of core things we're going to focus on of things that we can make better for the alt investor?
Yeah. So there are, when a space is just so manual and there are no standards, you can really be overwhelmed at like picking a starting point. So it's a good question because there is so much here to address, just like you guys are addressing the IRA piece. For me, it was, we have to get data into some structured format. Asset managers are operators. They're generally not accounting, strong accounting background. You want them to be spending time, operating their business, finding deals, running deals. And so there is no standard around how they report data. So the first thing that we did was we said, we have to meet these asset managers where they are. We have to take in the data in the format that they're going to give it to us in. We have to have a really intelligent backend that is, can be trained over time. So machine learning models that take in data from asset managers, and then they put it into this standardized format. Once you do that, I mean, that's the heavy lifting. Once you do that, then you can catch capital calls and you can say exactly when it's due, the amount it's due. You can go out and collect K-1s. And so really it was the core of our business is taking this very fragmented, unstructured data and structuring it so that we can put it into a tool that our investors or financial advisors can look at and operate from within.
Sure. And that definitely kind of hits at the core of some of this is the disjointed nature. I know professionally looking at these things, with some boilerplate exceptions, obviously, when you look at Reg D and Reg A different offerings, you have some similarities in paperwork. Some of the stuff is boilerplated, but, it can also, there's a lot of expanse from there. And how do you kind of take in that aspect of saying, okay, great, we have an asset class, which is kind of easy. Okay, we hang it under this umbrella. Then we have, a general thing saying, okay, we can track this. Is it kind of, are you simplifying it for the investor, but how much of that back end has been hard to deal with of saying, okay, do we manually reach out? How do we kind of track, getting valuations? Because the hard thing with this stuff is, what is the value of something? And we struggle with that annually on getting values of these assets. So what kind of steps do you take to saying, okay, we have this aggregate, the funnel that can catch it, but how do you, get that spigot on to be able to collect that data?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things. So, often we're referred to as having built the plaid for alts. And what that means is that we connect with all of the major fund admins, as well as the funding platforms. So things like iCapital, eFront, SunGuard, SS&C, Juniper Square, Groundbreaker, we have connections with all of these different places. And so we're checking every night to see if there are any new documents that are issued. And if a document gets issued, then we process it right when it comes in. Now, to your point, this world isn't updated the same way as, say, a public stock, right? You can go months and months you can go a year without a valuation change. We make our best effort on an annual basis. So, to apply a valuation. You can't throw automation at this and in technology and expect it to solve all the problems. But what we do is we track. We have a valuation team. We have a team of accountants that are effectively looking at each of these assets and saying, we're going to put our best foot forward and say, this is an office space, you know, it's an office building, maybe that's a 7 cap and we know the NOI on it is, you know, $100,000 a year. And so we can apply some estimate to how we value that particular asset. It's a good question. I mean, there's in the world of alts, which is just massive, there are professionally managed funds that are required to go out and get valuation updates, and we'll process those. And then there's the Porsche collection, the art collection, the single family houses that we just have to make a best effort guess around so that we can, you know, give you some idea of how it's performing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that I like a lot of, that I wish more people kind of understood when investing in this space. You know, everyone has to get here somehow. And normally it's not someone saying, hey, my first stab at investing is going to be alternative assets. It's not going to be startup company. Rarely. I mean, there's a minority of people that do that. But understanding some of those challenges is something I think people, and hopefully it's not too rude of an awakening where you're seeing something, you know, be really hammered. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I talk to clients, you know, every year around the time of our fair market value updates, and they're like, well, why wasn't this updated? Well, sometimes there's no material change. I mean, you know, yeah, that, you know, it's not just for the fact they haven't sent us something, but there just isn't. And, you know, kind of having, I think, you know, to that point, making it easier for people to understand that in the aggregate that you're working in is probably beneficial to helping people understand and be more comfortable with it. Now, for things like actionable items, so, you know, you kind of have the things that sit on the sideline, like valuations. It's, again, hard to peg down. Some are easier than others. You make your best effort, accurately show what an approximate value is. Because the problem with these things is they're valued at really whatever, you know, a buyout, a merger, or some type of acquisition is going to be. So you don't know until that offer's tendered. But let's say something like an actionable item. And these things can be kind of hard to peg down because some of them are like needs-based. They're not necessarily a schedule. So if you invest in an alt that says, hey, every quarter, you know, your initial capital commitment is, let's say, $100,000, your first initial investment is 25, and you have kind of an easy schedule, that's easy. But how do you kind of go about, is that same kind of boots on the ground or some type of predictive modeling you use to say, hey, okay, well, we see an initial $100,000 investment of a 250 and, you know, periodic draws once, you know, whatever triggering event happens. How do you kind of go about handling that? Is it predictive? Is it, again, just calling these people and following up with them? What does that look like?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time in this area. And I'll tell you, one of the first calls when we started the company, we went out and we had a number of calls with kind of all of the participants, asset managers, investors, family offices, CPAs. We made a connection with a CPA firm in New York, really intelligent alts investor. He had tons of deals. And he said, I couldn't tell you what I owe in outstanding capital commitments. And this was an accounting. I mean, this was a CPA. And so, you know, first we know based on the sub docs, we know what you've committed to,
yeah,
and we know what's outstanding. And so then as capital calls come in, we tick away at that, you know, that unfunded commitment balance. We are building out some cash flow pacing tools so that you can look at your distributions relative to, you know, what hasn't been, you know, yet funded. So we're working on some modeling around that. But we have tremendous amount of data that we make, you know, accessible around the percentage of funds that get called. You know, it's usually around 93% of a fund that, you know, of your overall commitment that is likely to get called. But today we're pretty reactive to waiting for a capital call to come in and then notifying you and getting ahead of all of it by just making sure that you know what your total unfunded commitments are.
Yeah, and that's a big issue we see with, you know, our clients of this fact, especially if you're investing in some type of, you know, tax qualified account or some type of custodial account, is that, you know, if you're once removed separated, whether that be a trust or some type of LLC, maybe that you're not directly a shareholder of that does these investments on your behalf, you know, something like this where it kind of funnels directly to you for you to manage that is very important. Because it's one thing if you personally invest in an alt, yeah, the mail comes to the house, it goes to your email. But especially there's so many different ways that people invest in these. And I think more and more people are doing it in some type of once removed custodial trustee driven account that keeping track of this stuff is very important. Yeah. So to that effect, I mean, I guess I would ask you, you know, are you seeing any particular trends on how people are investing into alts? Is it still a lot of people, you know, that, you know, just do it one-off personally, or are they kind of trending towards doing these in more structured or layered type of investments in different accounts?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, you know, last year we saw a lot of interest in slats, just given, you know, given the noise around whether or not the gift allowance is going to reduce. So I think we saw a lot of investing out of slats into long-term, you know, more institutional-like deals. But I mean, listen, you know, the overall environment, I mean, you know it as well as anyone. The overall environment is really supportive for alts. High inflation, volatile markets, you know, biggest wealth transfer, you know, in history that we'll see, where over 80% of these young investors say that they want to invest in alts. And that's the number one topic they want to talk to their advisor about. And so I just think that this is a problem, you know, structuring data, having a place for it to live, getting away from the spreadsheet, being on the same page as your advisor so that you can both see where you are, and having something that stays up to date. Whether that gets invested in a trust, in a custodian, you know, I think all of the above, I mean, BREIT and, you know, Blackstone's efforts through, you know, the BREIT product and KKR Apollo are all coming out with products that live in the custodians. And I think that's all getting more accessible. But I think we're seeing just interest across the board in alts. And I think we'll continue to see it.
So with increase in interest, you know, anytime you shine a spotlight, it kind of illuminates the dark and dusty corners of things that kind of get overlooked. From, you know, an investor's standpoint, what are some things in the market, either, you know, directly related to, you know, the operational space that you're in, are some things that are coming to light as more people are getting interested in this, you know, some issues that people just aren't kind of as aware of? It's easy to say, hey, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, run out, this prospectus, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, this fits my risk profile, that doesn't. That's all kind of relatively easy. You know, you should probably be doing that analysis of any type of investment, whether that's a piece of real estate, you know, private alts, securities, even, you should be doing that type of analysis. But, you know, from your perspective, what are some things that are, that you found that have kind of been overlooked that either you have helped, you know, create efficiencies for, or maybe that, you know, you are working towards improving in this space?
Yeah. You know, one of the big things is that when, you know, so, as you know, so much of this comes down to underwriting models, you know, that the, you know, pretty complex models that sponsors, you know, build and use when they go to the bank and use when they raise equity. And so what we want to see is how's the sponsor performing relative to what they, to what their targets were. I think I always found it really bizarre in this space that, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you invest in Amazon, and in this space has historically been such that, you know, you would go to Amazon to ask them how they've performed. Whereas really you log into your Schwab account and see how it's done. Right. And so we're trying to, I mean, we've built this model that is a third party in that, you know, in that world. And so rather than going to the asset manager, we're sitting off on the side, we're listening to cash flows, we're making our own estimates, and we're working on behalf of the investor to say, here's what we believe the real performance is. And that's based on, most of the time, it's actually based on what the asset manager tells us through their capital account statements, their capital calls, and their distributions. So through cash flows and then through valuation changes.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that brings up kind of something I just thought of. So you're talking about, and so do you really get too much into, like, you're talking about, obviously, the more you grow your data pool and you increase your data set, you can make bigger and bigger correlations on things. Data science is something I find interesting, but it goes right over my head. But from that point, you know, once you start collecting more and more data, you know, I would imagine that you're going to start seeing more players repeat in the same space. So are you able to kind of build profiles on saying, hey, here is the past performance of this, you know, individual or this group that's been putting together deals, and kind of be able to give additional tools to investors to say, hey, okay, you know, here's some past things that have done, here's, you know, some exits, some different things that have been invested in, or just some general numbers. Is that data set available to clients, or is that something you're building out or have built out?
Yeah, we're building it out now. It's our insights product. And so, you know, at the end of the day, what we want to do is we want better outcomes for investors and their advisors. And so we are, like you said, we're sitting on a tremendous amount of data, whether it's, you know, performance by vintage or performance by, you know, Sunbelt states and multifamily, and even interesting things like how much dry powder is sitting out there, you know, in Florida, waiting, you know, to be deployed in the multifamily space. That may help you decide if you're going to, you know, add additional dry powder into that area. And we have that data. So we're beginning to expose this to investors, so that they can at an aggregate view, they can make better investment decisions. We have to be really careful. There are no, in our world at the moment, there's no concept of here's how this manager has performed. The data that we collect is very private, and it's only viewable to you or your advisor. But with that said, there is this, a lot of asset managers, they just simply want better reporting for their LPs, and they're proud of the performance they've had, and they want that data to be out there. So that one's kind of a TBD, but we are at an aggregate view, showing you performance based on a whole variety of things that help you make better investment decisions.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, kind of one of the things that we do a lot in commercial real estate here. I would say by far and away, when it comes to the alt side of things, granted, everything we do is an alternative really within the space of retirement plans, but from the concept of, like, you know, the alternative securities, there's a broad term, commercial real estate, limited partnership type deals are by far and away the largest chunk of that. And it's a big chunk. So with that, a lot of people, you know, at least a lot of these funds in the different GPs, these things, I would say, just from at least my perspective, these types of investments turn over a little bit quicker. So the data, I would imagine, in the commercial real estate space is a little bit easier to build on performance models. Whereas, you know, if you're building a software company or an app or a widget, that's probably going to take a little bit longer and is a little bit more unknown if that's going to do anything. Real estate turns over a little bit quicker. So from that aspect, do you even kind of drill it down farther to say, okay, well, you know, we have data sets on, you know, specific areas, or are you just kind of breaking it down by, like, individual arenas? And I guess, you know, obviously the privacy concerns of you, you know, that's probably something you have to juggle as well by saying, you know, hey, John Smith has been the GP on 8 deals. Here's his performance over X. I could probably rile some people that don't want that out there. But a lot of people in commercial real estate, I mean, even, you know, single family real estate, the worst thing you could do in real estate is not tell people what you're doing. That's where they kind of teach you a realtor 101. So how do you kind of navigate that? Or is it still something you're trying to navigate and figure out the best way to do that, to where, you know, the performance based stuff that you're, the insights models that you're giving out is properly anonymized, but also properly insightful?
Yeah. This is, candidly, a big hurdle in the business. It's how do you, you know, you can sort of get this analysis paralysis thing where it's like, you know, most of our clients, while they have, you know, they are sophisticated, they also have a limited amount of time. And so we aren't trying to just produce like, here's the full data set, do with it what you will. We want to really make it actionable and clear, so they can quickly come to, you know, some sort of conclusion. What is interesting, though, is that asset managers, 70%+ of them, there was a survey recently, asset managers want better reporting for their LPs. This is without a doubt. They don't love living in this world where everything's a PDF, but they're not technologists. They aren't trying to solve that problem. And so I think, you know, asset managers are really supportive of the idea. They oftentimes want to join custodians. Their model may not fit it, whether it's an SPV or a real estate syndication. Those models don't fit tremendously well to go into Schwab and Fidelity, or even a time interval fund, you know, something that's that has capital calls and whatnot. So they're missing this other party or this other way of giving better reporting. And So we're working with asset managers to do that. And we're not getting any pushback. But to your point, we have to be very careful how we you know, expose data that we've obtained on behalf of the investor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a big thing, because obviously, you know, a fund manager would probably really like it if he's hitting home runs constantly, and, you know, that would drive more business. Hey, you know, Jane is killing it over here, getting, you know, 5x returns on multifamily with triple net and all sorts of fun keywords. But yeah, I mean, that's all, that sounds, you know, kind of what I imagined you would say on that. Now, to the points of things that, you know, I don't know. So, you know, coming into this space, you identified the problem of, you know, information overload. How do you streamline this? What are some additional benefits you can give as far as like insights and things to clients from the data that you're already collecting? So what are kind of like the next steps or the other things that are of issues that people, you know, could benefit from a service like this that are, you know, you're trying to identify going down the road? Like, what's your path forward from here? Obviously expanding on, you know, kind of the initial beta, I would say, is probably a good way to describe your insights, but where does it build from here? You know, what are the issues that are, you know, coming down the road that you see that you're trying to identify and help people with?
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah. So a couple of things. One, we collect all of your tax documents, and so that's been huge. That's a huge reason people sign up with us. We'll go out, if you have 100 K-1s and 1099s, we'll go out and we'll collect all of those. We'll deliver them to your advisor and we'll deliver them to your CPA. That's been a big win. But I think where I'm most excited is I follow, you know, I love this, you know, the syndication space. I love the emerging manager space. I love talking to folks like Jake and Gino and storage guys that are doing a bunch of things. That space is incredibly fragmented. It's, you know, I follow it. Most advisors and many investors don't. And you have to kind of follow Twitter and go to meetups and like find these managers. And it's become very inefficient, where they're managing their own marketing budgets. They're going out on their own, you know, to investors. And so what we're doing is we're building a distribution model where asset managers can distribute their product through us to advisors, and they can do it without going through the custodian hurdles, without, you know, because again, the custodians don't fit perfectly for real estate syndications and for, you know, for emerging managers and a variety of different funds, fund structures. And so we're partnering with online platforms. We have one we'll announce next week, a big online funding platform. They basically want to get distribution out to RIAs. And so we'll pull in data from that fund platform and from other sponsors. And we will make that available to wealth managers, to RIAs. And then we'll allow the RIA to, you know, to bring it into their aggregate reporting software like Black Diamond or Addepar, so that they can report and they can bill on it. So to answer more broadly speaking, the big thing that we're solving for next is, you know, you have custodians that are hitting institutional, you know, institutional deals. And then you have the, you know, kind of the cases of the world that are also focused on institutional deals. There's a big world in the middle of emerging managers and real estate syndicates and online funding platforms that today just have pretty limited reach. Half of investors invest through their RIA. So they want their advisor to come to them and say, this is the deal that I recommend we look at. So distribution is a big piece that we're working with asset managers on to get.
So you're saying, so just from the context of this, if I'm understanding correctly, just on kind of translating this to my world, is that when you say asset manager, are you referring to like someone that's in like a GP position or someone that's actually going out and soliciting for investors to come into a deal, right?
That's right. Yeah. Sponsor of a deal. Okay. Whether it's a, yep.
Gotcha. So like, and again, to make sure that I'm kind of understanding this right, so you're kind of making the play to say, hey, you know, here's a list of open investments that have, you know, come across, you know, if you, to kind of bring in that, you know, Charles Schwab fidelity, like, hey, here's all these securities, here's tracking price list of stuff, here's what's still open and available. Is that kind of the space you're moving towards?
Yeah. Let me explain it this, try to explain it this way. So let's just say that you have a storage GP, a storage operator, and today they're accessing investors. they don't have a great way to access the other 50% of the population, the investors who invest through RIAs and wealth advisors. And the problem that the RIA has is if they invest in that deal, that storage deal, on behalf of 25 different clients of theirs, every time there's a distribution, they'll have to log into a portal 25 different times. Whenever there's a capital account statement, they have to log into the portal 25 different times. So what we've built is this open architecture where we integrate with their, we'll integrate with their existing fund admin. So the storage, you know, GP is using, call it Groundbreaker. We integrate with Groundbreaker. And when that RIA invests, you know, on behalf of their clients, their 25 clients, we'll pull that data in, we'll aggregate it, we'll structure it, and then we'll aggregate it. And so the investor can see how the deal's performing. The RIA can see how it's performing. And then that data makes its way into the RIA's aggregate wealth management system, like a Black Diamond, Attapar, Orion. And from there, they can bill on it. And so basically, we're leveraging just our open architecture approach, where we don't care. We'll meet the asset manager where they are, whichever fund admin and whatever data structure they have, and we'll pull it all the way through into their existing systems. So it gives them this very custodian-like feel. That's what we're building out now. We have several large asset managers that have, you know, come on board that we're getting ready to announce.
Yeah, because essentially they're saying, okay, you know, I see this meets the investment criteria for this certain group of investors. You know, I'm going to deploy, you know, funds attributable to X, Y, and Z there. It gets aggregated back into their system. Quick question on this. I like the technical legal aspect of some of this stuff. Are the issues posed by solicitation under Reg D or Reg Day of the Jobs Act for these different types of non-private securities, is it because like the way that you're framing it is to the RIA that's responsible for then vetting and making sure that whatever they're placing their funds into is compliant with, you know, accredited investors, all that kind of different stuff? Is that the reason that it's not necessarily being solicited openly? It's kind of just a backdoor portal where someone can say, okay, I see this, I'm taking care of that, you know, compliance, and then, you know, then obviously the structuring of everything else. Is that kind of the workaround to that, or is there other issues there that I'm missing?
Well, I think are you saying the workaround that we have in place?
I hesitate to even use the word workaround because it implies that there's an issue there. I'm just saying, I guess the better way to say is that the reason there's not an issue with that? There's probably a better way to phrase that.
Well, I don't know if this answers the question entirely, but you know, this 506C space is really fragmented, and there are limited options where these operators, these sponsors or GPs, where they can live and put out their, you know, put their deal out. Mm-hmm. There are more options available if you're going direct to investors. But the, you know, it's pretty limited in how an RIA can, you know, can access those deals. And so we aren't putting ourselves in a spot where we're saying we recommend this deal and this is what the IRR is and all that. What we're doing is we just want to make the connection, you know, to a Jake and Gino or one of their, you know, one of their community members, or, you know, really to an emerging manager to say, you know, to really matchmake an RIA to a sponsor, and more importantly, to provide the pipeline, you know, for it all to happen and exist and to not be too burdensome for the RIA or their investor.
No, absolutely. I think, yeah, just it's always interesting when I'm talking to someone in different spaces of me just one trying to kind of digest and take it in and say, okay, here's how this works on the terminology that I use. That's another thing that kind of drives me up well, is like the different terminologies between in the space individually. Like I work, again, primarily a lot in commercial real estate. If I talk to someone that's doing like startup companies and everything else like that, I'm like, I gotta like take out a cheat sheet. I'm like, okay, that's what you meant. Yeah. It's one of those things where, again, I think just, you know, from what you're doing of trying to make this stuff, you know, more aggregated, more uniform. I think that's kind of the big thing I'm taking away, is the uniformity issue in all of this is what's lacking. So being able to kind of funnel stuff and make it more uniform and digestible essentially would help anyone. You know, it's you know, think about any industry, once you kind of have things coming together and being more uniform, it makes things, you know, a lot easier.
You and I are in the fastest growing asset class, and it's generally very manual. There are very little standards around it, and I I'm obviously a big proponent of technology solving this problem, but I think it is going to take firms, you know, that fintech firms that are really, you know, cleaning up the overall experience. You guys have cleaned up the experience, you know, on the IRA front, you know, tremendously. And I just think that's what has to happen. This ecosystem has to catch up to the interest and demand and, you know, that's happening in the alt space.
Yeah, and I think that brings up an interesting point. So you talk about like kind of evolution of things that have to happen. You know, what are some actionable items do you think that are, you know, reasonable to be taken in this space that you think, you know, might happen or that you would push to happen to make this altogether, you know, a better experience for everyone? You know, Pat, you're trying to build that service, what it sounds like, you know, to a point, you know, with what you're doing. But what are some other things out there that are kind of concrete things that would help, you know, this all work better?
Access to, so in the, you know, in the EU, we've seen some real standards being honestly just required that data become open, you know, banking standards so that fintech firms can access data and they can do it, you know, in this scalable way. You know, in the States, we don't have anything today. There have been, you know, pushes to do that, but you are seeing, you know, folks like Groundbreaker and Juniper Square and, you know, other firms that are really adopting kind of an open architecture approach where they want their data to make their way into other systems. And I think that's, you know, it's self-serving. I mean, it really gets you out there, you know, so that RIAs can bill on your services and there can be full visibility. And if you're an online funding platform, a lot of these platforms are doing great for investors, but their RIAs have no idea. And so the more they can open up their data and sort of refactor some of their old funding platforms and the technology, the more they can make it accessible through APIs, I think that's going to really move the needle a lot. And we're seeing that happening. We're seeing that happening here in the States.
Yeah. So, I mean, it probably is something on like a sliding scale of like this closed loop system to like something like anonymized public blockchain. You know, I think somewhere in the middle is what you're probably kind of hinting at, of some type of uniformity, not necessarily something to the extreme of blockchain, but obviously not like the closed door, like the walled garden that we have right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And we're seeing, you know, kind of, I think you know, the market's kind of sorted out. I mean, you're seeing some of these new fund admins that are just growing, you know, incredibly well. And they're competing with folks that are just, you know, have been acquiring for the last 20 years and really have never, you know, haven't sort of paused to revamp, you know, their technology. So I mean, it's encouraging. We're seeing it, but, you know, I come from the data center world where I ran data centers and we have to think about our service. You know, the analogy I use is that it's almost like building a data center in Venezuela, where you can only be as, you know, as good as what's around you. And then you need generators and you need backups and you need, you know, you're operating in this, you know, very old school space, but it's coming along. I mean, it's encouraging. It's coming along.
That's good. What kind of like, do you think this like, you know, mass uniformity, do you think it's something on the horizon for investors in the next 5-10 years? Like, obviously I've seen, at least personally in the past 10 years, there have been just, you know, it's been, you know, a multiple of efficiencies have come out of seeing like what was, and even our space, just in everything in general, like the efficiencies from, let's say, 2012 to 2022 have been immense. And obviously it's starting, you know, the diminishing return is starting to happen now with, you know, how much better can it get? Well, I mean, it's going to be, you know, marginal increases, you know, from that point. So what do you see like in the future? Like, how do you view this marketplace, you know, operating in the next 2 to 5 years?
Well, so sort of a fun fact, Alt Exchange version one was an initiative by eFront to kind of go top down from asset managers and say, hey, let's all band together and report data in the same way. That failed, as you can imagine. And so we purchased Alt Exchange and we said, no, we don't think that that's what the future looks like. We think the future is we have to use good technology and we have to meet asset managers where they are and take in the data that they have. So I think that that's important for structuring data and having everything on the same page. But also the other interesting thing that happens is, you know, fund administration has just become this easy thing to outsource. And so we'll onboard a client and they'll say, well, it's too bad because these investments I have, they don't use Carta or they don't use, you know, any sort of, there's no data that gets issued. And we usually say, well, give it a couple months. They will. And so usually what happens is, you know, someone comes in, they do a couple deals, you know, and as an asset manager, and they may not outsource fund administration, but they quickly do. They just find it makes sense. And that's sort of the private markets at work. I mean, that's the competitive nature that fund administration has become. And it just makes sense. And so the more that happens, the easier we can access the data in whatever format that they give it to us in. So I think in the next 2 to 5 years, I mean, this space grows tremendously and the fund administration space, you know, continues to evolve. And I think investors and their RIAs and all of the participants have a better experience overall with alts.
And is that being driven kind of by the overall data science of this particular set, or is it, you know, something where like other emerging markets like machine learning and AI are really kind of taking, you know, kind of, you know, fueling the fire of the ability to have this done? Because, you know, this data has been around for a long time, but it's hard, you know, how do you aggregate it while you're developing that? But then, like, you know, like you said, for the next 2 to 5 years, what are kind of some of the driving factors that are helping with that efficiency? Because, you know, like we said in the beginning of this, it's, you know, there still is the manual effort of, you know, you employ people that actually have to contact these people saying, hey, X, Y, and Z for some of this stuff. So is the, you know, the continued improvements with machine learning and AI something that's going to continue to help this? Or, you know, what is the, you know, technological aspect that you think will help to keep these wheels turning?
Well, I think what's going to happen, I mean, we love our machine learning and we love, you know, how it improves upon itself. But really what I think is going to happen, here's sort of a mind blowing, thing to me in the world. Like if you live in this very unsexy world, this is mind blowing to you. When a fund admin produces a PDF, they're doing it from fairly structured data. And so they have the cash flows, they put it into this document. I think what'll happen as there's more, which is crazy. We just want we want that data before you put it into PDF, just give it to us. And I think that these fund admins, we're already seeing that they're opening up data and they want it to be more accessible because their customers, the asset managers, they want better reporting for their LPs. So I think that the markets will just push cleaner data and it'll push these fund admins to open up APIs because we, you know, Alex, we hear it all the time. We hear, you know, the same position I was in. I love alts. I just can't keep up with it. I can't keep up with the capital calls. I don't know how they're truly performing. My advisor has no idea, you know, how I'm investing and how they're performing. So I think that those forces within the market will continue to push for cleaner data and a cleaner experience.
And I think that's kind of also something to do with the generational aspect of this. I know, you know, older generations, you know, let's say people that are, you know, right now 45, 50 and older have a much better, you know, can stomach, you know, manual things a lot better than at least my generation. I'm 33. you know, it better be readily accessible and easy to use for me to want to do it. And, you know, now, you know, my generation right now, the millennials is the ones that are, you know, accruing more wealth, doing the more alt investing. I guess it's risky space. You know, typically people that are 65, 70 retirement probably aren't doing this type of investing. So it's shifting down in that column of age. And I think that also is probably going to drive it, you know, generational factors, as well as just no one wants a bad experience. You know, you want to make money, but you don't want to pull your hair out doing it. You know, it's This is kind of the old adage.
100%. I would be on a phone call, get a capital call. My advisor would try to meet the capital call, and I would go, I see $300,000 go out of my bank account. And I go, did someone just get into my bank account? So just all of the issues associated with the fact, I mean, even what we often hear is alts make up a bigger part of my portfolio. If I'm hit by a bus, you know, how's my wife or my husband, or how are they going to know where I've been investing? But on the generational aspect, Merrill Lynch put out kind of a study that I think referenced since the start of COVID, their demographic, which is an older demographic, I think pretty well in line with, you know, where wealth sits today, in terms of the demographic, but they saw a 200 some odd percent increase in mobile usage since the start of COVID. So I think you're right. I think we're certainly going to see it generationally, but we're also already seeing that existing investors, they want better clarity on performance, and they want to get away from the spreadsheet and.
Absolutely. Completely agree with that on how buried in spreadsheets I've been this past week with that, all this stuff going on. Well, I think that's a good place to end it, kind of a good note on, you know, what it means going forward. So I know we certainly have a lot of people here that are invested. Again, everything we do is alternative, but specific to what y'all kind of doing, if they're interested in maybe engaging you to help, you know, fix some of the reporting stuff they have going on, how can they get in touch with y'all?
They can go to our website, altexchange.com. They can also send me an email, zak@altexchange.com. We have a number of ways to reach out to us. But yeah, I think, you know, if any of this resonates either with investors, advisors, or asset managers, or CPAs, our goal is to just kind of grease the wheels in the space. And so love to have the conversation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Zach. Again, this has been the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. My name is Alex Perney, and hope everyone has a great rest of their day.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at advantaira.com and subscribe.